Hello.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cloud English Podcast. My name is Luke, and it is January 7th, 2053. It's great to have you here. Thank you for joining. There are a lot of things we're going to go over today. A lot of things to talk about. A lot of English to learn. Explorations will surely abound. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope you had a good one. Hope you're having a good one. I don't know what that New Year period really is. Merry Christmas to some people who are celebrating Christmas today on January 7th. I recently learned, I don't know why I didn't know before, that Christmas is celebrated in the Russian Orthodox and Serbian Orthodox and the Eastern Orthodox Church on January 7th. Why didn't I know that? I don't know why I didn't know that for a long time, but I recently learned it. And actually, I'm not quite clear still on all the connections between there's Eastern Orthodox and there's the Serbian Orthodox. And I don't know exactly how closely they are connected, or, you know, I think they're in the same sort of family of traditions, but I'm learning about it. I just got a book about it, actually, so I need to get up to speed on that. Anyway, good to have you all here today. We're going to be talking about words. We're going to be talking about... Well, we're going to be exploring language a little bit, exploring words, talking a little bit about etymology, if you don't know what that is. We're going to be talking about some interesting word differences. I'm going to be sharing, I think, an interesting strategy with you about how to remember words, something that I actually did over the weekend as an experiment, which worked very well. And I've got some tongue twisters to share for a specific sound that I want to go over today. So anyway, that is that. So I think we can get into it in a minute here, right at the top of the show, if you haven't done so already, and you are inclined to, feel free to hit the like button and subscribe. It's a simple action that you can do, which is enormously helpful to the channel. If you're listening, then do your version of that thing. Whatever that may be, 5-star review on Apple Podcast, or follow on Spotify, right? Whatever it is. So I appreciate the support. If you want to get the new course, the coupon is still active. So check that out. The new course is a prepositions course, 30-hour course on English prepositions. Can you imagine? Very long. But so far, people are enjoying it. So far, I believe I've had four or five reviews, and they're all very positive. So that's good. Usually it takes, you know, a good week or two for reviews to start coming in as people take the course. And all indications are it is a solid course, which I'm very happy about. I mean, I knew it. I was pretty sure, but it's good to have that sweet, juicy validation. I like it. Let's see what else at the top here. If you want to submit anything, share anything, ask anything, you can do that in the Discord. You can join that also in the links in the description. You can also get a 1-year membership. It's actually a monthly membership, but it is a 1-year membership in the sense that the discount that you can get for the website is 30% off for the first year, monthly. That sounds complicated. For the first 12 months, if you have the membership, then you can get the price that you would pay if you were paying all at once, but you can pay every month instead of yearly. So that's nice. So grab that. That gives you access to all the courses on the website. And is there anything else? I don't think so. I think that's about it. yesterday we had a colossal snowstorm here in the Hudson Valley of New York. This much snow, more than I can show on screen, more than I can do with my arms probably. So much snow that when I tried to shovel my sidewalk, I found it impossible. That's how much snow there is. I can't even shovel it. That's a lot of snow. But there's salt on the roads, and so the roads are drivable. My driveway has been shoveled. My neighbor luckily shovels my driveway. I'm fortunate to have a neighbor with one of those shovel thingies on the front of his truck. So that's convenient. But I can't shovel my sidewalk because the snow is just too heavy. I know. I mean, I could do it, right? But is it worth it? The Amazon delivery person, they can throw the packages in front of the garage. They don't have to go up on the front porch every time, right? So I feel, my feeling is that it's fine. Am I lazy? Yeah, maybe. I'm a little bit lazy, perhaps. So I want to share, right? I want to share something right at the start here. This is a very interesting thing for those of you who have been using ChatGPT to practice and learn vocabulary. I've talked about how you can do this. It's in much more detail in the course, right? But I've actually been using ChatGPT to learn more vocabulary. But I'm doing it in an interesting way. And this is totally an experiment. But I've got this list of words that I want to learn. Words that I kind of know, but maybe I feel like I don't have a deep enough intuitive sense for how to use them. So I want to sort of learn them better, right? And so I have this list of 1,500 words or something that I want to learn. I actually want to learn more this year. But what I want to do is I don't want to learn them by writing them down. I want it to be all through dialogue. So I have asked essentially ChatGPT, and let's go over to ChatGPT. Let me just show you this here. So I provided my list, and I just did a few because I knew I was going out. I was going to drive to a shopping center over the weekend. I was going to be in the car driving for about an hour, and I thought, well, I could, if I wanted to, just listen to an audiobook or podcast, which is what I often do when I'm driving. But perhaps instead of that, I could have this back and forth. Well, if you do a voice chat with ChatGPT, what you notice is that sometimes you get steamrolled, meaning that he or she will just talk and talk, and it's tough to give instructions. But if you provide the instructions clearly and then start the voice chat, then you can have a productive conversation and shape it to your liking. So I just gave a very quick sort of set of instructions. I was on my way out the door, so this is not very well structured. I'm not recommending you structure it this way. I was on my way out the door. I quickly typed this up and copied it, pasted it, and then I left, because I knew that the chat would then be there and I could continue it with a voice chat. I want you to help me build memory palace objects for specific words that I'm trying to remember. I'm going to give you the entire list of words, but I don't want to do the entire list at a time. I want you to simply go one word at a time, talking through each word, its meaning, common usage, and then help me come up with a memory palace description or image as a mnemonic. Now, mnemonic, this is when you associate a sound with meaning or a word. This is called a mnemonic. It's a great, powerful memory technique We all use mnemonics to remember things. It's sort of that sounds like thing, right? Sounds like this, or piece of this new thing sounds like this other thing. The thing you already know. And because it sounds like that, you can remember it, okay? So don't start with the first word yet. I want you to first say, I understand. Then we can get started and do it as a conversation. Here's the list of words. And then I have a list of words here. They're not even, some of them not spelled correctly. I have a G here for some reason. Why isn't there a G there? Mendacious, sacerdotal, ne plus ultra, diaphanous, indigence, self-castigation, expiate, and veigled? I don't know how to pronounce that correctly. Okay, so anyway. And again, I'm fairly familiar with all of these words, but I don't find myself using them as often as I would like to. So I have this list I've put together for words I would like to use more often. And so what happened then is I got in the car and I drove out of the driveway and everybody's doing their own thing. There's music playing. And I start this conversation and say, what did I say right at the start here? What did I say right at the beginning? Let's begin. And I spoke this. So this is in the chat record we're looking at here. Let's begin. Great. The first word is mendacious. The word is an adjective and it refers to, and this is me, I'm now listening to this in the car. I'm listening. The word is an adjective and it refers to someone who is not telling the truth, being deceitful. It's often used in contexts where honesty is crucial, like in legal or personal matters. Now, for a memory palace mnemonic, imagine a large ornate mirror. In your palace, the mirror has a unique quality. When a truthful person looks into it, it shows a clear and accurate reflection. However, when a mendacious person, someone deceitful looks into it, their reflection becomes distorted and fragmented. So, this image was a good starting point, I found. But it didn't help me connect the sound of the word. I needed a better mnemonic, and so I gave that feedback. The word is a mnemonic. I like the concept of the mirror, but as a mnemonic to remember the word, I need something a little bit more. Okay. So, and remember, I'm driving down the road. I'm driving and I'm having a phone call with ChatGPT, basically. And we're doing this back and forth. And finally, kind of collaboratively, we come up with this idea that we have the mirror and there are two people in the mirror. One is Nelson Mandela. And the other is somebody else. And they're arm in arm. And in the reflection, he looks very... I don't know that much about him, but he's fairly well known as honorable person who stood up for his principles. I don't know everything about his history, of course, but in my image, you know, he's the one who can see himself in the mirror. And the other person is wiggly and wavy and you can barely see them. I get this image of the sort of this fuzzy person who's kind of transparent. Why is he in the image? That's the first thing that reminds me. This is a mnemonic. The mnemonic is he's close enough, right? Close enough. So now I have something that can remind me of the sound. This mirror is in a particular place in an old apartment that I used to live in. I know it very well. In a neighborhood that I used to live in, this whole neighborhood and this apartment is dedicated to this list of words. And so now I have a place in an apartment, in a neighborhood, and I am storing this particular word along with its meaning. The mirror tells me the meaning. Nelson Mandela tells me the mnemonic to remind me of the sound. And so all I have to do is walk through that apartment, see that mirror on that wall in that place where I know it is. And oh, why the heck is Nelson Mandela there? Oh, yes. Oh, I see. Ah, and then it all just kind of unfolds. And the more you walk through the palace, this is how memory palaces work, the stickier it becomes. And so, you know, I did this whole list in the car. I think something like, I don't know how many words it was, 12 to 15 words in the list. We went through dialogue, through conversation over a period of a 50-minute drive, something like that. And by the time we had arrived, without writing down a single thing, without copying a single thing, I had locked all of these words into my mental memory palace space in this apartment, in this neighborhood. Everything has its place. And anytime I need any of these words, I not only know the meaning, but I can quickly call them to mind. And that's pretty cool, I think. And it's very powerful. I've done it for other things, a lot of other things. Concepts I find to be even easier. But for specific words, when you're remembering word lists, I haven't done a lot of specific word memorization where I've deliberately tried to learn a bunch of words at one time. I haven't done it that much, and so it was very interesting to do. I wanted to see if I could do it with no writing, and I was successful at that. So that's pretty cool, I think. So try a version of that out yourself next time you're trying to remember something. You can use this technique, by the way, for all kinds of things. That's the very cool thing about it. You can, you know, if you're, where's my pen? One second. Oh, pen. Where are you, pen? Seriously, where is the pen? I'm going to write something down. If I'm going to write something down, I need my pen. Leave it to the pen to just disappear. Oh, guys, we're always here, but pretty soon he's going to be recording something. We got to disappear fast. We're needed. Okay, I found it. Right? There is a pretty complex, not complex. There are many similar things, let's say, when it comes to memory and this memory palace, concept. Excuse me again, sorry. And one of them is called the major system. So we have this general concept, which is called the memory palace. Let me write this down here. Memory palace. And we can use different techniques, different methods, different systems within this memory palace. One system for example, for numbers is called the major system. And the major system, maybe something we can talk about more at another time, but it's basically you're assigning a number to a letter. And then when you're remembering a number, you use letters in the system to make words, and the words make up stories, and so you can remember really long strings of numbers, basically by making stories with words. And you go through the story, and then you just unpack everything. And then there's another one called POA, Person Action, or Person Object Action. PAO. Person, action, object. I think it's person. Is that right? Is that the order? I don't use this one that much, but basically you're connecting together a person, doing a thing with a thing. Yeah, I think it's PAO. Doing a thing with a thing. And that's another system. You can use that to remember numbers and all kinds of different things. And anyway, it's really interesting. And I would encourage you to explore it further if you're trying to learn stuff, if you're trying to memorize things, if you're trying to dive into the world of memory. It's pretty cool. I use it for a lot of stuff that I read. I mostly use it for reading. I don't really like taking notes. I like to try to do stuff in my head if I can. And sometimes it's a challenge, but it's a fun challenge. It's a challenge that I enjoy. All right. So let's get into etymology. Sometimes it can be really interesting to explore the origin of words. Anytime you are learning a word, one thing you can do to get a deeper sense for that word or to get more context is to Google the word and then the word etymology. The word etymology. I'll write that down for you. An etymology is exploring the origin or the history of a word. And so you have this word that you use today. You wonder, why is it this way? Why does it have this sound? Well, there are all kinds of different reasons why it might be the way it is. Maybe it was invented last year. Maybe it came from Old Norse. Maybe it's from Chinese. Who knows, right? So it's I think, very interesting to explore it. Now, is it necessary? Well, it's not necessary. No, it's not. But you can start to make connections between words the more you study the origin of words, the history of words, where words come from, because you'll start to see roots, word roots, prefixes and suffixes that are common. And you'll say, oh, I think that comes from Latin. Or this one seems like the structure of the word. Maybe that seems similar to another word. And so you'll start to make these connections. It can be helpful. But it is interesting, I think. And one that is, in particular, very interesting is the word clue. A very short word. Clue. What does clue mean? Well, a clue is similar to a hint. It is a thing which might help you to figure something bigger out, right? And if someone gives you a clue, if someone gives you a clue about something, then maybe that will lead to another thing, and that might lead to another thing to then figure something out. Could be a mystery. It could be a problem. It could be whatever, right? Something that needs to be solved. Give me a clue. Now, the word clue was originally C-L-E-W. Now, let's look that word up in the dictionary. Let's look that up on Merriam-Webster, shall we? Let's pop over here. C-L-E-W. And I'm going to zoom in a little bit more. And this might surprise you. A ball of thread, yarn, or cord. And then the second one, clue sense one, lower corner or only after corner of a sail, a metal loop. Okay. To roll into a ball. All right. Now, if we Keep going down here, we find something very interesting. A little story. Did you know the ball of thread, meaning of clue, from Old English, blah, 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 has been with us since before the 12th century. In Greek mythology, Ariadne gave a ball of thread to Theseus so that he could use it to find his way out of his father's labyrinth. Rather, her father's labyrinth, not his father's, excuse me. Yeah, that makes sense. It's not his father's labyrinth, it's her father's labyrinth. This and similar tales gave rise to the use of clue for anything that could guide a person through a difficult place. So we have a specific story, and the myth of Ariadne and Theseus opens up a new way to use this word in a more abstract way. We use it abstractly to mean anything that I might find out or get that can help me figure something else out, right? It's a little piece. But originally, that's a specific thing, a ball of yarn. So the original story, if you don't know it, is just that. There's this lady, Ariadne, and she and this guy, Theseus, who has volunteered to be sacrificed to the Minotaur, the bull, this beast in the center of the maze, who actually plans to kill him, that's his ultimate plan, is given a little thing by this lady who falls in love with him the night before he goes into the maze where the Minotaur lives. And the maze is designed by Daedalus, this great inventor, who's invented many things, and nobody has ever made it out of the maze. But Ariadne gives him this ball of yarn, which he uses as he goes into the maze to help him find his way out. Anyway, he finds the bull. The bull is not happy. He ends up killing the bull, but the bull is actually grateful because he lives such a miserable life. And let me show you this one here. Here's him in the maze with his ball of yarn. And here comes the Minotaur. Half man, half bull. Not happy. There's even a maze on the wall. So anyway, that's a clue. That's a clue that she gives him. And now we have this word. And we never really think about, at least I've never that often thought about the original meaning until I learned about it recently. But now that I know that, it kind of adds a layer of depth to my understanding of this word. I don't think it will change how I use it. I don't think it will change when I hear it, how I feel about it when I hear it. But just knowing it somehow gives me a depth. And that's an interesting part of using language, is you get these, every time you hear a story like this or learn the etymology of a word or the history of an idiom, you get this slightly bigger picture, and it makes the language itself more interesting. And I think that makes using it more fun. I think it makes it possible to speak with a little bit more nuance and depth, right? But it's very difficult to say exactly how, right? It's hard to exactly describe, but I think it does, right? Just knowing that, somehow rattling around in the back of my mind now, is cool, is interesting. So go out there, if you want, explore words, find out where they come from, what they mean, and see if it changes at all the way that you're using the language. Or if you find anything interesting, just let me know. If you haven't done so already, of course, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe and get a free course in the links in the description. I just made this picture. I think it's pretty good. This one's pretty good too. He's in good shape. That Theseus. Whoa. Ripped. He's ripped. Why is she giving him two balls of yarn? I don't know. All right. Well, let me change some settings here. My eraser is way too small. And I need it to be bigger. Hold on. This is boring, I know, but... I know it's boring, but I need to make it bigger. There we go. That's better. That's much better. Now, sometimes the board I'm using to write on, because I'm not necessarily an expert in, you know, Photoshop or... That's pretty good. Let's make it a little bit bigger. Let's go 14. How's that? How's this? And suddenly it just doesn't work. What the heck? Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's good. It's just so unpredictable. I'm fed up with the pen tool sometimes. Now, it's not supposed to go anywhere outside of the... It's not supposed to go outside of the boundary of the board, but it is now. And that's very frustrating. I don't know why. Grr. Anyway, we're going to explore some word differences. Enough griping. Enough complaining from me. We are going to talk about the word differences, a few word differences. Can I fix this live? It's too general. Can I fix my pen tool? All right. One of the most common kind of questions I get is, what's the difference between this word and that word? Yeah, it's reasonable to ask because you have these two words which are very similar or maybe exactly the same. And you want to know what's different. Or can I use them in exactly the same way? Because you want to be able to communicate clearly. Right? I always try to remind people to think of these two circles like this. And then a kind of space in the middle. This is a Venn diagram. These two weird eggs are a kind of Venn diagram. And you have, usually for most words that are the same, a meaning in between that is the same, but then usually over here and over here, you have meaning which is different. And so what I want to do is explore some words and how they are different, how they are the same. Okay? So let's first look at persuade. And convince. And I apologize, it looks a little stretched out and a little bit strange because my board is acting up. But persuade and convince. What's the difference between these two words and what's similar between them? What's exactly the same? Well, if you say, right, that after a week of thinking about buying this car that you've been looking at online, you really like it, you finally were persuaded to get it by a close friend. You were finally convinced to get it by a close friend. Which one is more likely? Well, either one, but it depends on really what happened and what thing made you finally make the final decision to say, you know what, I'm going to get it. The thing that persuaded you might be more of an emotional argument. I'm learning how to write because my pen just got weird and stretched everything out. So let's see. Hold on. Shun. Okay. Oh, that was the hardest thing I've ever done. I know it looks very easy, but imagine you had to learn how to rewrite, how to write for the first time in a new, totally new way with your other hand. Well, that's what I'm doing right now. Okay. So if you're persuaded, maybe it's about what's going on in your life. You know, you have the money to spend. This is not a big cost for you. And you're always saving. You're always budgeting. You deserve something nice. You deserve it, right? Live a little. You only live once, you know? We have one life to live, not that many days, and you're going to just pinch pennies all the time? That's all you're going to do? Always budget for what, you know? You deserve to splurge a bit. You deserve to just have something nice. So get it. And you say, you know what? You're right. You're right. Well, this to me feels more like persuade. It feels more like an emotional argument. Right? So if I say, he persuaded me, he convinced me, generally, yeah, it means the same thing. Somebody said something which made me do it. Or he or she persuaded me not to. He or she convinced me not to. Same basic general meaning. They said a thing. They said some things that made me decide not to. But the emphasis is different. So the first one, emotion. Good for your, you know, you deserve it, that sort of thing. Convince is more about, here we go again. I have to give my full concentration to writing this word right now. Are you ready? This is me learning to write. The fourth word I've ever written in my life. L-O-G. See. Oh, that was very difficult. Okay. So if there's logic, you're giving arguments for and against, pros and cons, right, to make it add up so that it makes sense. So that I say, yes, that logic has convinced me. Well, yes, convince would be the right word, right? So again, this is not a hard rule where it must be. It must be that when you want to focus on logical arguments, you use convince. And when you want to focus on emotional statements or persuasion, you use persuade. But generally speaking, that's the feeling. That's the connotation we get from these, generally, okay? So here, what would logical arguments be? Okay, well, you make this much. This car costs this much. If I look at your, you know, your monthly budget, this car, the payments for this car would be 5% of your total monthly take-home pay. that is in the range of what most financial advisors consider to be affordable. On top of that, right, you currently live in a household with two people, both of whom occasionally need to drive, and you only have one car, and there have been times in the past where one person needed the car and the other person had it, causing conflict. So to resolve that conflict, it would make sense to have a second car. So these are not really things I'm saying to make you feel a certain way, maybe. I guess maybe a little bit. But I'm trying to give you logical reasons why it makes perfect sense for you to do this. Or the opposite, not do it. So he or she convinced me not to do it would be to give all these reasons why it's a bad idea. And some of those will have, you know, of course, emotions involved, but it really is the focus here. That is the main difference between persuade and convince. I want to be very clear. It does not mean always you must use only one or the other. If you're talking about emotion, you must use persuade. If you're talking about logical arguments, you must use convince. No. But you may more often use persuade for emotional, an effort to make somebody do something or not do something. And when you're trying to explain the reasons for things, you may be more likely to use convince. So hopefully, now that you understand these, I can persuade you to practice them a little bit. Try to put them in some examples so that you can get a feeling for how to use them. Hopefully I can persuade you to do that, because if you do that, your English is going to be better, because you're going to be using words more accurately. You're going to be using words. You're going to be using language with more nuance. And that's a good thing, because it makes you sound more fluent. If you haven't already done so, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe to help me learn how to write. I need your support. So please like and subscribe. And also you can get a free course in the links in the description. All right, Martin is here. Hello, Martin. We're doing okay, except I'm having a, let's call it, malfunction with my board. It's very frustrating. It's infuriating. And I must get it fixed, because it's almost, I would say, almost impossible to write. Almost impossible to write. Okay, now we go to map. Hold on, I gotta fix this mapping. Okay, we map. We do portion. We do portion, yes. And then we do portion of monitor one. Let's see if this works. Hold on, give me 1 second. We are changing the location of this. Okay. Okay, let's try this. Let's see if this has worked. Almost. I feel like I'm almost there. I need to move it over slightly. Hold on. I'm almost there. I know this is not very exciting for you, but for me, this is everything. I need this. I need this. I need this. I need this. Okay, let's see if this works. Oh, that I think is much better. I think I might have fixed it. Why did it just suddenly stop working? That's the weird thing. Okay, we're in good shape. Watch how easy it is to write now. Persuade. I mean, look at that. Convince. Logic. Oh, I can't go lower. Hold on, I need to make it a little lower. But that's way better. So imagine I have four monitors. I'm looking at four monitors. And the pen tool, the board here, is locked onto a particular one of the four screens, a region of one of the four screens, right? And it's that way because I only need to write in one area, which is where the blackboard is, right? That's how it goes. And then suddenly it just changes its mind and it spreads the usable area over all four monitors. So suddenly the entire thing is stretched super wide. So one pen motion is being stretched over four screens instead of part of one. So imagine if suddenly that happened, the calculation you have to do in your head to try to write is outrageous. The amount of time I've actually had to spend talking about as I'm trying to fix, just as I'm trying to fix it, my pen situation is really, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Anyway, that is much better. I think that is a lot better. Almost there. Yes. Let's do that. Let's do that. Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We are back in action for sure. All right. Yay. That makes me very happy. All right, let's move on. I actually want to do another word differences because I find it pretty interesting. So let's do courage and bravery. What is the difference between courage and bravery? Courage versus bravery. Just as a reminder, remember, we have words that mean the same thing, or are synonyms. There are some ways to use them exactly the same, but also always some nuance. That means, yes, they're the same, but not exactly the same. That's the thing about a thesaurus. It gives you this list of words that are the same, but they're never exactly the same. There are no two words that are 1,000% the same, never, ever, 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 ever used, are always, always, always used in exactly the same way. I think. Maybe there are a couple. I don't know. But it's a Venn diagram. It's this, it's these two circles side by side, like that. And they're used the same maybe here, but they have their own nuances. So, courage and bravery. Well, brave would be the adjective form, and courageous would be the adjective form. So here's an interesting difference. The adjective form of courage is longer than the noun form. But the adjective form of bravery is shorter than the noun form. That's interesting. That's pretty interesting, I think. So both of these are the noun form, right? Courageous and bravery. And brave would be the adjectives. Okay, now, what is the difference? If you think of someone who is courageous, often we're emphasizing a trait about them. And a trait is something about you as a person. That is your trait. Now, you can use brave as a trait, too. But it's more likely that you would use courageous about a person to talk about that person as a general way that they are than to say brave in general. And the reason for that is because typically courage is for these ongoing things that may not be sudden, exciting, or, you know, in any way something you would want to watch in a movie, right? But are more general, just difficult things to go through. And they may take a long time. And again, it's not a hard, clear difference between these. This is just the connotation of courage, right? A quality. Some words that are similar to this, maybe steady. And I think of a prolonged difficulty. A prolonged difficulty. Why did I put that over the... Let me fix that. U-L-T-Y. Okay. Something that lasts for a long time. Or maybe danger. Quiet persistence. Right? In a situation where you just don't complain. Right? You have courage to go through things. And so an example might be a student who goes through many years of extremely challenging, demanding academic pressure, right? Or exams, all of the things that a high-level student maybe has to go through. All of that may take courage to go through that, to deal with all of the stress at such a young age, right? Or maybe there's some kind of trauma that happened, and dealing with that trauma is or takes courage. Recovering from trauma. So a very scary bad thing happened, and just getting over that, the strength that it takes to get through that without giving up, without losing hope, right, would be very courageous. Now, will people say you're very brave? Yes, but I think it's more likely that you would use brave for that thing that happened, to go through the trauma, to experience the thing and get through it, and then maybe not use brave to talk about the recovery part, but courage would be more likely for the recovery part, that long, enduring process of dealing with it after the thing has happened, right? Bravery is often, and now I'm going to write down some words that I think we could use for bravery. And again, this is the connotation. This is how it's used. So, and this is, you know, this is challenging here. A burst of boldness. A sudden act. Right? Facing danger. And so, will people use courage in this situation too? In a movie, someone facing a dragon, or, things crashing all around. Will people say, you have so much courage to stay strong in that situation, or keep your wits about you in that situation? Sure, yes, they will say that. But I think bravery is a better word for that sort of situation. So when you're going through the thing that is, exciting and scary and dangerous in the movie, then you're brave. When you charge into battle, you're brave. When you get through a long, drawn-out thing that is not fun or difficult, or maybe the recovery from a big, exciting, dangerous, scary event, then you have maybe courage. And I want to make it clear that you can use either one of those to talk about both kinds of things, but it's more common to say courage for one and bravery for the other. So as a maybe an image to hold in your mind when you think of bravery, think of a knight in shining armor fighting a dragon with flames and all of that stuff. And when you think of courage, maybe think of someone walking down the street with others pointing at them and laughing at them, and they're just quietly walking down the street. We don't know why they're being mocked or laughed at or pointed at, but it takes courage to do what they're doing, to walk down the street when others are pointing and laughing, right? Bravery, yes, but courage is more this enduring thing, okay? So hopefully that makes sense, and hopefully that helps give you a more clear idea for how these are generally used. If you have any questions, let me know in the comments. Try to use these yourself. If you have the courage to use what you learn in your daily life, you'll get the feeling for those things. You'll start using them more naturally. And then your English fluency will improve. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe. And also, get a free course in the links in the description. All right. Is reckless similar to bravery, a questioner says here. Martin says. This is a really good question. So Martin says, do you use reckless similarly to bravery? And I think it would be more likely to use reckless similar to brave, reckless similar to brave, than to use courage similar to reckless. You have this Venn diagram thing, right? These words can have some overlap, but then there are places where you wouldn't use them in the same way. So there might be a line between reckless and brave. And that's where you may use one or the other, and where it may be someone's opinion. So let's think of an act, right? Let's say that there's a huge ramp like this. I think I'm getting this from a Tom Cruise movie that I haven't seen yet, but I've seen the trailers. And then someone on a motorcycle named Thomas Maypother III, right? Going, well, with a parachute on, it's a motorcycle, going off the ramp into the air, motorcycle falls down here, parachute is pulled, and Tommy Boy slowly floats down. Now, is this a reckless act, or is this an act of bravery? And there we might use an expression. There is a fine line between recklessness and bravery. So there are some things that maybe take bravery, but they're stupid. They're dangerous. And so I don't say that you're brave for doing it, because I think it's a dumb thing to do. And so I'm going to use the word reckless instead of brave, because I think it's very dangerous. However, if I know that this is very well researched and that there are three backup plans in case anything goes wrong, and, you know, all kinds of safety measures, then maybe I'll say, well, he's quite brave for jumping off the ramp, if I know the full situation. So to answer your question, it could be used similarly, except generally if we describe someone as brave, that's usually a positive trait that they have. Why you're so brave to go into that dangerous situation to save the little girl from the burning house, right? And if we find out that they didn't go into the burning house to save a little girl, but they went into the burning house to save their CD collection from the 1990s, we might say, that was so reckless. I'm not giving you a compliment now. I'm saying you're stupid because you almost died. And so while reckless and brave are different in meaning, one is a compliment, you're so brave, and one is not, that was a stupid thing to do. You could have died or been hurt. The line between them may be very thin. I hope that makes sense. So to answer your question, do you use reckless similarly to brave? Yes, because the line between them is very fine. It's a fine line. No, because the actual meanings of the words are very different. One is a good thing. Generally, one is not. And I hope that makes sense. Good question. Now that we've got the board fixed, I feel so powerful. I can write anything. Wow. But yeah, that's a great one. Okay, where are we? We've talked about word differences. I need to take a sip of tea here. Okay, tea break. Tea break time. I'm gonna take a tea break. So the new course that I mentioned earlier, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 reviews that have come in so far, which is you know, pretty normal for the first week. It's only been live for 1 week. The course has only been live, so 5 reviews is good. Because people are going through the course, it takes time, right? And also, there's an approval process for the reviews on the Udemy site. This is from Udemy. Amazing, detailed explanation of many things. Great. Says Denis or Dennis. Denis, I think. And there's one review that's in Spanish, it looks like. Or could be Portuguese. I'm not totally sure. But I do see the word recomendo in there. And it is a 5-star review. Amar says, prepositions are complex, but this course can really help me understand them properly. And then 2 other 5-star reviews without comments, which is okay. You don't have to leave a comment if you don't want to. I appreciate it, but you don't have to. You know, as a course creator, this is something that does happen. Because a lot of people take the courses. So, for example, on Udemy, I think, you know, the most people are taking, a lot of people are taking courses there. They have a good review system. But sometimes I wonder if it's interesting to see the differences in people's idea about what a good review is, right? If I really like something, I want to support it. And so I give full stars. I give 5 stars to show support. But if I don't like it, then generally I'll give 1 star. I mean, if I'm upset about it. I usually kind of go one extreme or the other. But even if I kind of like it, I give it 5 stars. I find some people have a different idea, and that's okay. That's okay. But some people will say, I see, like, that was amazing. Loved it. And then 4 stars. And I, what I wonder when I see it is, okay, I actually appreciate you saying that. I appreciate that. But what would it take if that's if it's amazing, what would it take to get 5 stars? It's my question. Just an interesting thing I noticed about reviews. I think so. Once in a while, we'll see people say, like, loved it, and then 1 star. I think they think 1 star is 5. Like, 1 is the most. 1 is the highest, like number 1, I think. I think that happens too. I have a friend who does courses as well, and he said something similar. You get comments like, awesome, loved it, 1 star. It doesn't happen very often. I've seen a couple of those. Very interesting. Okay, I'm just looking at my phone now. Why am I doing that? Why am I looking at my phone? Wait a second. Merriam-Webster? I'm still looking over at the word clue. Merriam-Webster has a podcast? It's a 2-minute podcast? Are you telling me Merriam-Webster has a 2-minute podcast? What is this?
If you like using debit over credit, don't you think it's time?
That's an ad. Skip.
It's Merriam-Webster's word of the day for November 2nd.
November?
Today's word is clue.
Oh, that's okay. So it's. They do just a word of the day as a podcast, and it's very short. That's pretty cool.
Spelled C-L-E-W. Clue is a noun that means a ball of thread, yarn, or cord. It can also mean something that guides through an intricate procedure or maze of difficulties. A clue, C-L-U-E. Clue, C-L-E-W, can also mean a lower corner or only the after corner of a sail, or a metal loop attached to the lower corner of a sail, or, when used as a plural, clues, a combination of lines by which a hammock is suspended. Here's the word used in a sentence from The Iron Heel by Jack London. But this boldness that I took to be presumption was a vital clue to the nature of Ernest Everhard. The ball of thread meaning of the word clue, C-L-E-W, from the Middle English word that ultimately came from the Old English cluin, has been with us since the beginning of the 12th century. In Greek mythology, Ariadne gave a ball of thread to Theseus so that he could use it to find his way out of her father's labyrinth. This and similar tales gave rise to the use of clue, C-L-E-W, for anything that could guide a person through a difficult place. This use led, in turn, to the meaning a piece of evidence that leads one toward the solution of a problem. Today, the variant spelling clue, C-L-U-E, which appeared in the 17th century, is the more common spelling for the evidence sense. But you'll find clue, C-L-E-W, in some famous works of literature. Also, clue with a W is the only choice for the sailing senses.
Interesting. Okay, so Merriam-Webster has a podcast, very short podcast, doing word of the day. Interesting. Cool. Very cool. Russian with Puma Messi says, what software do you use or have your stream right now? I use something called Ecamm, which is for Macs only. I've used OBS in the past, and OBS is good too. OBS and Ecamm are pretty similar. I personally prefer Ecamm. I think it's a little bit better. But I've used both. Okay. Well, I want to get into some other stuff, so let's do that, shall we? Yeah, sure thing. Sure thing. let's explore some idioms for clothing. It's something I had planned a while ago, but we didn't get to it. So let's get to that. Idioms related to clothing. Oops. Sorry about that. All right. Hey, where am I? Hey, where am I? There I am. That's not right. Oh, I know why. 'Cause I think I need to be over here. Yeah. That's better. One second. Where's my program window? All right. Let's talk about idioms for clothing. We're going to be getting into some really interesting, I think, idioms. We're going to be talking about dress to the nines, fit like a glove, a wolf in sheep's clothing, buttoned up, dressed up, hang up one's hat, and tailor-made. We're going to be looking at examples, of course, so let's just get right into it. The first one is dressed to the nines. Dressed to the nines. To be dressed up very elegantly, usually for some sort of special occasion, to be very fashionable, right, is if you're dressed to the nines. Now, don't worry maybe too much about about the reason why it's dressed to the nines, but maybe when you're trying to remember this, you can think of the number nine as a symbol for completing something, right? It's often the symbol for perfection or to be on cloud nine. So maybe you picture two people dressed in very elegant attire and they are standing on top of a cloud and it's cloud nine. Maybe that will help you, maybe not. I know cloud nine. It's called a mnemonic. Find one that works for you to remember this idiom. But I think really the best way to remember an idiom is to learn an example. So let's check out an example. I'm going to move myself over. Some examples in connotation. Usually this is used to mean looking good, right? It's when talking about someone's clothes or their sense of style or their sense of fashion. And usually it will be used in formal occasions. So you might say, for the company's annual gala, everyone was dressed to the nines. Or he's always dressed to the nines, even for just a casual dinner out. Or at her cousin's wedding, she was dressed to the nines and looking stunning. All of these would be very common ways to describe someone. You can replace it with, he was dressed very well, right? Dressed very well, dressed very elegantly, or something like that. It's just another way to say it as an idiom. Okay, now let's go to the next one, which is fit like a glove. Now this one should be pretty easy to remember because, well, if you think about a glove, then you know that fits on your hand. Think of a glove that's very, very tight, right? Squeezing a glove on that is pretty tight, but still fits. It's not too small, right? So if something is very snug or fits perfectly in all the right places, then it fits like a glove. So can a hat fit like a glove? Yeah, a hat could fit like a glove. You might describe clothes as fitting like a glove, but it doesn't have to be only about clothing. You might say, for example, a role that someone is in fits like a glove, their position, right? If you have a job and it's totally perfect for your personality, you can say that job fits you like a glove, right? Sometimes it can be negative if it's used to talk about something being too tight. It can be. It's usually positive when you're talking about a good fit, right? Like clothes or like a job or some activity or, you know, those two, a couple, they fit each other like a glove. You could say that they're a perfect fit, but if something is too restrictive, it could be considered negative. Usually it's used in a positive way. Now let's look at some examples. This new blazer, which is a kind of jacket, fits like a glove now that I've lost weight. Is that a good thing? Yet generally, yes, yes, yes. Or maybe you've gained weight and you could say, this used to fit me like a glove and now I can barely squeeze into it. If you can barely squeeze into it, then it's generally going to be too small. Probably not very comfortable. I found the perfect pair of boots. They fit like a glove and are so comfortable. The boots fit like a glove. Boots like a glove? Yes, yes. Sometimes you buy a pair of shoes and they're just a little too big or just a little too small. These fit me like a glove. I love them. They're the perfect fit. She was nervous about the new job, but I knew it would fit her like a glove. Well, that means that it's a very good fit for maybe her working style or her personality, something like that. The next one, a wolf in sheep's clothing. Now, this one is actually not that common to actually talk about clothing. The other two that we talked about can refer to clothing, dressed to the nines, being very elegant, very formal maybe, dressing very well. But a wolf in sheep's clothing, well, this rarely has anything to do with actual clothing. So it references clothing, and that's why we're talking about it, but it is more metaphorical. Someone who hides malicious or bad intent under the guise of being kind. This is where you show people that you're being nice and kind, but actually you have other intentions, bad intentions. So if you know someone like this, you might describe them as a wolf in sheep's clothing. Basically, it's deceit, being deceitful. So you can picture maybe a wolf wearing, you know, the story of Little Red Riding Hood, right? Maybe a wolf wearing the granny's wig and clothes hidden underneath of innocent appearance. We actually know that the wolf plans to eat Little Red Riding Hood. So that is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Yeah, I guess we could use sheep as well, hiding under the sheepskin, right? But the sheep is considered to be an innocent thing. I like the Red Riding Hood example anyway, right? So is it negative? Yeah, of course. It's used in a negative way to talk about someone who is pretending to be one way and actually they're the other way. Their intentions seem good. Actually, they're not. It doesn't have to be evil. You know, you could just say they're not being totally honest or they're being kind of deceitful in some way. But you might say generally it is when someone is trying to get some advantage from others and the others don't know. So let's look at a couple of examples. He seemed helpful at first, but ended up being a wolf in sheep's clothing, always manipulating situations for his benefit. That investor was a wolf in sheep's clothing, using charm to hide his scam. So maybe he wasn't a real investor. Maybe he was actually a scammer. Ooh, not good, right? Very bad. Okay, next one. We're moving right along. Buttoned up. Now, this has a couple of interesting meanings. At first, you might think, oh, that's the same as dressed to the nines, because to be, you know, dressed dressed well, maybe, or you're very buttoned up, but actually it's different, right? This is usually to be dressed conservatively or in a reserved way and maybe not eager to share your feelings. Not just share maybe being open about your clothing style, but in general about your personality, right? So this can refer to clothes, but it can also refer to the way someone behaves. So for this one, maybe to remember it, you can use it or you can think of someone who's buttoning something over top of them, right, to hide something. They're putting they're closing many buttons. There's something they don't want you to see. So you could say, well, this person is buttoned up. So let's talk a little bit more about then how it's used. So if you're talking about someone's appearance, right, they're kind of conservative, the way that they dress, maybe they're very professional, they're very meticulous, very neat, then you could say they're very buttoned up. I first think of Captain Von Trapp from The Sound of Music, the way that he always wears really nice, not always super formal, but he's just always very neat and well-kept in his appearance. His hair is always nicely done. You know, he's always wearing kind of military-style clothes. He's very buttoned up. This does not mean only fancy, by the way. This means, you know, neat, organized. But at the same time, Captain Von Trapp's, if you've seen the movie The Sound of Music, he's also dealing with a lot of pain, and he isn't open with his emotions. He treats his children like they're in the military. He isn't open with how he feels about them. And then along comes Maria, and she changes the whole situation, right? She's like a tornado. So he's buttoned up in the way that he dresses. And then he's also buttoned up in his personality because he's kind of emotionally closed off to everyone around him, kind of repressed in that way because of the loss of his wife, right? So her buttoned up style at work generally includes blazers and a collared shirt. I've never seen her in casual clothes, would be referring to her style. Okay, she's always just wearing kind of neat, nice clothes. But she's always buttoned up at meetings, but outside the office, she's actually quite fun, would be to talk about two different styles that she has. At work, she's very serious. She doesn't joke around. She's not very relaxed and goofy, but outside of work, she is. She's buttoned up at work, but outside of work, she's maybe more fun and silly. Now, this might sound the same, but it is a bit different. Dressed up. So this is to wear special clothing to be fashionable, usually for a specific occasion or for a maybe a goal of looking like something else or someone else, right? So one would be if you want to think of elevating yourself to a higher level of formality. Normally, you're kind of dressed down. We don't usually say that, but dressed down, you're wearing casual clothes. And you dress up, that means you want to raise yourself up to maybe a higher level of formality. You could say that, or maybe up to a different persona, because we also use things like dress up for Halloween when we're talking about costumes. So it's not just about being formal. It's also about an appearance we're trying to achieve, whether that's a princess or Harley Quinn or Barbie or just going to a big event like a wedding, right? All of those are dressing up. But you would use as if it's a costume for Halloween, for example, or a costume party. So it's generally a positive word. And it's used to talk about, you know, participating in special events and often related to a theme like a party, as I said, or for costumes, holidays, or maybe a theatrical performance. You would go to the theater and you would wear your tuxedo or your nice gown because you're dressed up for, and often the word for follows dressed up for the theater, dressed up for Halloween. But if you want to say what you are and it's a costume, then you would say as. I'm dressed up as Barbie, for example. Okay, so let's look at some examples here. We're going to a fancy restaurant tonight, so we need to dress up. Dress up. Just dress up. that's fine. I don't often dress up. Well, let me go back a few seconds. I missed that. I don't often dress up, but for the interview, I made an exception. So I had an interview. I usually wear casual clothes, but for this one, for this interview, it's very important. I decided to dress up. For Halloween, the kids love dressing up as their favorite superheroes. One is Spider-Man, one is Black Widow, one is Hulk. They're dressed up as their favorite superheroes. To hang up one's hat. So this is to retire from work or to give up a long-held position in any activity. So it doesn't have to be retiring from your job, your main job in your life, right? It's generally just, okay, I've been doing this thing for a long time and I'm decided to do something else now. So I'm hanging up my hat. I'm hanging up my hat. Finally, after 20 years, I've decided to hang up my hat. And again, it might be your career, right? So doing this, hanging up your hat, you know, imagine coming home from work and putting your hat on the hook, basically saying, okay, I'm done. Well, hanging up your hat for the day would be, I'm done for today. Hanging up your hat, the end of the day would be the end of, well, maybe your career, for example. I almost said life, and I realized career is the right word. Okay, so what's the general usage and connotation of this one? You know, it's not a positive thing, like, oh, he's hanging up his hat, hooray. Could be good or not good. It's just a description, right? Basically, hey, this person is not doing this thing anymore. And sometimes that will make people feel sad, and sometimes not. People will celebrate and say, oh, congratulations, you're finally hanging up your hat. Well done, right? After 40 years in the industry, he's finally ready to hang up his hat. She's thinking of hanging up her hat and traveling the world. Now, what is she doing? We don't know. We don't know what she's doing. Could be anything. Maybe it's her job, maybe not. Maybe it's some book club she's running. Yeah, I've been running this book club for 5 years. I think I'm going to hang up my hat and travel the world. The book club has been preventing me from traveling, and I want to travel. Okay. After only one day of practice, I officially decided to hang up my hat. Now, this is kind of meant in a slightly jokey way, right? Usually, hang up your hat is when you've been doing something for a long time. But when I was in maybe ninth grade, I don't remember exactly, I attended a wrestling practice. One. And it was awful. I hated it. I hated every second of it. I couldn't wait to be done so that I could quit forever. So I might say, in a slightly joking way, after only one day of practice, I officially decided to hang up my hat as though I were retiring, you know, but actually I've only been doing it for one day. So it's kind of a slightly silly remark. Okay, last one, tailor-made. This is when something is made to suit a particular individual or task really well. So it's created for them, for that thing, right? Software can be tailor-made. It's kind of like the word custom, a custom table, right? A custom suit. You can have a suit made for you, or dress, a custom maybe arm for your computer. It's tailor-made for this use. Tailor-made for me, tailor-made for something, tailor-made for, right? For a particular purpose or for a particular person, right? So here you can maybe picture someone with super long arms, and there's a tailor that's measuring their arms, and each arm is double the length of a normal person's arms. But the suit that they're making has extra long arms. It's a special suit for this person with crazy long arms. Okay, so it's tailor-made for them. That's just a little way to remember it. So how is this used? Well, generally it's a positive description of the thing that was made, because usually it takes extra time, care, and expertise to make that thing, right? And so if the suit is tailor-made, then it's sort of like a ooh, special thing, huh? Maybe that was expensive. Oh, who's your tailor? The name of a person who makes suits or measures suits or adjusts suits or clothing is maybe a tailor. Well, we extend that now to way more things. Something can be tailor-made that no longer has anything to do with a tailor, the job tailor, right? But we can think of it in the same way. It's made for each person. It's custom. It's unique. Whether we're talking about an app or a hat, clothes, a gadget, a tool, thing you make yourself, you can tailor make something for you if you like. Or if you find something that just seems perfect. This is so me, right? It's like it was tailor made for me. Wow, right. So this software solution seems tailor-made for our company needs. Tailor-made for our company needs. The training program was tailor-made for new hires, making their transition smoother. So there's a program that was maybe customized, not just a generic training program, but they want to make a custom training program for people. Well, it is tailor-made. The skills are tailor-made for this project. So there's a project, and this person has the exact right skills for this project. So it's like his skills are tailor-made, okay? So while not all of the idioms that we talked about are talking about only clothing, like buttoned up, for example, and sometimes fitting like a glove or a wolf in sheep's clothing, they come from clothing. We talked about dressed to the nines, fit like a glove. A wolf in sheep's clothing, buttoned up, dressed up, to hang up one's hat, and tailor-made. So I encourage you to practice these on your own. If you have any questions, please let me know. I'm more than happy to try to help you learn how to use these if you're not quite clear. I would love to see your examples if you haven't done so already. Don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe, and also check out the links in the description for a free course. Okay. Well, speaking of that, we might call it a day, friends, neighbors, pilgrims. We might call it a day. It's getting a little bit late here on January 7th. About time for me to call it a day and maybe hang out with the family a little bit. Tomorrow is Monday. Monday is Monday. So I hope you all have a fantastic week. I hope you have a good one. Stay safe. Practice. Again, reach out if you have any questions. Join the Discord. That is free to do, right? You can join the Discord in the links in the description. In addition to the free course, if you want, you can get the yearly membership to get all the courses on the site for a discount. It's 30% off, but it is monthly. So you get the annual discount, but it's charged monthly so that you can cancel anytime you like. I think that's a pretty good deal, and I recently added four new courses to the membership. So check it out. Stay safe. Good luck. Have fun, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.